from LPM,
Louisville Public Media.
Support for LPM podcasts comes from the Eye Care Institute and Butchertown Clinical Trials, where they strive for diversity, equity, and inclusion within their staff, patients, and clinical trial participants. To learn more, visit butchertown.clinic.
Automakers are betting heavily on a future with electric vehicles. Here in Kentucky, Ford recently announced it will build two battery manufacturing plants in Hardin County for its planned electric vehicle lines, an investment of more than $5 billion. Toyota is expanding operations at its North American plant in Georgetown, in part to accommodate electric vehicle assembly. I'm Rick Howlett. Today on In Conversation, we'll talk about the future of the automotive industry in Kentucky and elsewhere, and challenges it currently faces. We want to hear from you as well. Call us this hour on In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. Welcome to In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. I'm Rick Howlett in Louisville. Good to have you with us today. Today we're going to talk about the automotive industry in Kentucky, across our region and around the world. Vehicle makers are, as they always do, planning for the future. But these days it's, for many, a future more heavily weighted toward the electric automobile. We'll discuss the future of the auto industry and challenges it's facing today. Supply chain issues related to the pandemic have slowed production with fewer models on sale at the dealer's lot. And joining us to shed some light on all of this are four guests: Melissa Aguilar-Southard, Member Relations Director for the Kentucky Association of Manufacturers, is with us. She has a lot of experience in workforce training, higher education, and working with and among local and state governments. And she's with us on the phone. Melissa, good to have you with us.
So much. I'm so happy to be here.
Ron Starner is with us. He is Executive Vice President of Site Selection Magazine, an international business magazine based in Atlanta, and he reports on the auto industry. Ron, good to have you with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
And welcome to Jay Bauer. He is a senior trade credit consultant and supply chain expert from Euler Hermes North America. They're the largest provider of trade credit insurance in the world. Jay, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And last but not least, Marcus Green is with us. He is a reporter for WDRB News and WDRB.com here in Louisville. And it's been a while since he's been among us here in the studio as a guest on our show. It's good to have him back. Marcus, welcome.
Thanks, Rick. It's good to be here.
And of course, we want to hear from you too. Call us with your thoughts about the auto industry, automobiles, the future of gasoline-powered vehicles. Electric vehicles, do you plan to buy one sometime? Supply issues related to the industry, we want to hear from you. 502-814-TALK is our number, 502-814-8255. You can send us a tweet, WFPL News is our handle, and we're also on Facebook. Well, let's start with the big Ford announcement recently here in Kentucky. Ford Motor Company and SK Innovation, that's a South Korean company, announced what officials say is the largest economic development project in the history of Kentucky, $5.8 billion investment that will create some 5,000 jobs. And let's hear some audio from that announcement from Bill Ford, executive chair of Ford Motor Company, speaking last month in Frankfurt.
The world is changing in profound ways. Technology and automation are transforming the economy. Floods and extreme temperatures that threaten food and water supplies here in Kentucky are fast becoming the norm rather than the exception. And we see all of this as a call to action, to design and build a future that will reshape the economy and protect our planet in ways that work for all of our families, to create new waves of good, stable jobs that will support our children and our grandchildren. And we have to be bold, we have to go big, and we have to do it now.
That's Bill Ford, executive chair of the Ford Motor Company, speaking back in late September in Frankfurt, announcing this big project in Hardin County, two battery manufacturing plants and construction set to begin soon. Ford also announced around the same time. A similar facility and campus would be built near Memphis, Tennessee, making a total investment of over $11 billion in electric automobiles and batteries and plants for those electric automobiles. So let's start with you, Melissa. What's been the reaction among the people and companies you serve in the Kentucky Association of Manufacturers? The big plans like these, of course, have a big economic ripple effect. What are you hearing?
They do, absolutely. You know, the three words that was echoed was bold, big, and now. And we are certainly hearing that from a lot of our manufacturing members. You know, it's a great announcement, by all means. I think that there's on the peripheral, we've got some prep work to do, you know, as related to specifically workforce and education. We've got to be able to ramp up skills and ramp up the number of individuals who are working in Kentucky and are able to go to work every single day for those jobs as well.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that because they're talking 5,000 jobs. I mean, is it going to be a challenge to fill those jobs with the workforce that we have here in the region?
I mean, I can't say that there's not going to be a challenge. We've got 520 plus companies in Kentucky that's auto related. You know, two Ford, one GM, and one Toyota. And when we really think about the number of employees, we've got 100,000 plus employees employed in the auto industry right now. It has something to do related to components, parts, or service for auto related manufacturing. And so I can't say that there won't be some challenge, but I certainly think that we're going to try to rise to the challenge. We've got some things on the peripheral as well for 2022 and 2023 for CAM. You know, we're really trying to ramp up a lot of awareness about the manufacturing industry, not to just our young people who are in high schools and colleges, but we're also trying to ramp up specific careers that we can get people back into the workforce or into a workforce that hasn't been in there previously.
Ron Starner with Site Selection Magazine. At another point in his remarks, Ford said something to the effect that his two passions were making cars and protecting the environment. To paraphrase, two things he acknowledged have run counter to each other over the years. Is Ford the company taking the lead in this country at this point when it comes to investing in the electric car sector?
Well, right now, if you look at the combined investments of Tesla, Ford, and General Motors, you're talking upwards of $10 billion just in this country alone. And, of course, we're not the only country where they're investing. But just like if you look at some of the 10 largest global automotive investments in the world since 2019, now fully five of them are in the United States, and actually four of them. So there's General Motors in Michigan, General Motors in Spring Hill, Tennessee, General Motors in Wentzville, Missouri, Fiat Chrysler in Detroit, and obviously this Ford project with SK in Kentucky. So half of the 10 largest automotive plant investments in the world are taking place right now, going up right now, are in the United States. And that doesn't even touch the battery component of these projects, because almost all of these are planned investments to build electric vehicles. Well, they also need batteries to power them. And so you're seeing a flood of new high dollar value battery projects coming into the U.S. as well.
Are people, has it been your view, people are starting to warm up to the idea of driving an electric car?
Not only are they doing it, but they're typically selling out before they even hit the showroom floor. I mean, if you try to buy a Ford Maverick pickup truck right now, you can't find one on any lot anywhere, because they're already committed to a buyer before they hit the showroom. The response to the Ford Lightning has been pretty overwhelming. Once they started advertising those products on TV, the orders began flooding in. I believe they're sold out for the first year. That's typical of the response we're seeing in the consumer marketplace to electric vehicles these days.
Is there are there plans down the road with these companies that where there will be a tipping point where they'll be making more electric cars than gasoline powered cars in the near future?
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's coming sooner than we expect, particularly as legislation is enacted in specific states around the country. You may or may not be aware that the state of California recently implemented a law requiring that all new vehicles sold in the state of California by the year 2030 be electric vehicles. So it doesn't mean you won't be able to drive a gas-powered car on California roads 10 years from now, but it just means you won't be able to buy a new gas-powered car there. And I think we're going to see more legislation like that. California is typically a harbinger for the rest of the country when it comes to carbon emission driven legislation. And, just as we saw renewable portfolio standards become the norm about a decade ago, I think EV standards will rapidly become the norm in states.
Marcus Green here in Louisville, actually down the hall from me right now, WDRB, WDRB.com. You've been covering these announcements and the auto industry here in Kentucky, and you've been looking into how the new Ford and SK battery plants might attract supplier plants to the region. You reported there are hundreds of suppliers here now serving existing auto plants. So what did you learn about the potential new suppliers for these battery plants and for electric vehicles here in the Commonwealth?
Well, as Melissa mentioned, there are 500-plus companies in Kentucky that are tied to the auto industry, and only a few of those are the actual manufacturers. Most of those are companies that make components that go into the cars. And so with the arrival of electric vehicles and, as Ron has suggested, a really rapid emergence of them in the potentially, next decade or so, we're going to be looking at how the suppliers might flock to not only those manufacturers, but places like the Hardin County plant that is going to make batteries. And will suppliers that provide components for the battery manufacturing process look to locate close to that factory? And so Governor Beshear has indicated that he wants Kentucky to really try to get out in front of this new industry, the supplier industry for the electric vehicle sector. And it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out. And again, this is all a very quickly emerging side of this industry. One thing I do think is important to note, as has been mentioned, in terms of just looking at legislation that might be needed or that might happen in the coming years, I think something that is important to keep in mind as we watch electric vehicles and how they're going to settle in the marketplace is that for Kentucky and many states, the way that they fund their roads is through taxes on gasoline. When you go to the pump and you buy a gallon of gasoline, you pay a tax, and that tax helps to build new roads and improve and maintain roads. So a lot of states are not only going to be looking at potentially introducing legislation that affects electric vehicles and standards, but also states are going to have to grapple with how do we fund roads if the majority of cars on those roads don't use gasoline. That's a really interesting conversation that I think we're all going to have to look forward to in the future.
Yeah, lots of unknowns here for the future in the industry and here in Kentucky as well. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk more about the future of the auto industry here in the Commonwealth and elsewhere. There's a lot going on now, too. Automakers and auto dealers have been impacted by the pandemic, of course, and the resulting supply chain issues. And we're going to talk to our supply chain expert, Jay Bauer, about it after a break. This is In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio.
These high-tech sustainable campuses will do for the 21st century what the historic Rouge plant outside of Detroit did for the 20th, set a new standard for American manufacturing. And I believe that competition will follow our lead. And actually, I'm happy about that because we compete in business every day, but we share the same planet. And when it comes to creating a clean, sustainable economy, we have a shared responsibility. We know that the American people, our customers, are ultimately going to be the ones to drive this change. And that's why we're going to keep creating the best vehicles in the world. Zero emissions and zero compromises.
That is Bill Ford, the executive chair of Ford Motor Company, speaking last month, actually late September in Frankfurt, as Ford announced this big $5.8 billion investment in Kentucky that would create 5,000 jobs and build, in conjunction with SK Innovation, build two large battery manufacturing plants in the Glendale community of Hardin County. Ford also announced around that time a similar project down near Memphis, Tennessee. And welcome back to In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. I'm Rick Howlett, and today we're talking about the automotive industry. Lots of big plans here in Kentucky, but two of the world's largest automakers, Ford and Toyota, Ford in particular betting heavily on the future of the electric car with a multi-billion dollar investment in Hardin County. Toyota announcing a major expansion that will include a room and an expansion in the plant there to assemble electric automobiles. We'll talk more about that later, and we'll talk more about the future of automaking in the Commonwealth in a moment. But now I want to bring in Jay Bauer, who's been patiently waiting. He's senior trade credit consultant and supply chain expert from Euler Hermes North America, supplier of trade credit insurance. Jay, factory shutdowns during the pandemic, as you well know, have halted production of parts. We've been hearing a lot, especially about a semiconductor shortage, computer chips. Talk about the effect it's been having on the industry, and when do you think the supply will catch up with demand?
Yeah, Rick, that's everyone's question as far as the crystal ball on when some of these supply chain challenges will subside. And if we go back in history as far as where we were in March of 2020, The global pandemic prompted automakers, suppliers, and car dealerships to close down. So even though it's only been a little more than a year, the economy went into a deep recession during that time, and a severe one. So the automakers, having experienced recessions in the past, they quickly canceled all their orders for computer chips, thinking sales would nosedive. Sales of new cars did plummet initially, but it's quickly rebounded just with the pent-up demand, the financing, and folks wanting to get back out there and purchase vehicles. So that's the culmination of the COVID-19 pandemic was certainly an accelerant for change in balance sheets, change in inventory, and how we manage supply chains. So that was kind of how we got here. Looking to the future, to answer your question, we were anticipating and hoping that, you know, by the first half of 2022, things would be coming to somewhat more of a more stability, but it looks like that could last well into 2022 with some of the pent-up demand and the continued strain on supply chains, Rick.
So how is this affecting the automakers financially? I'm sure they're taking some huge losses, as they probably were, you know, for other reasons due to the pandemic, but how big of a hit are they taking, and how are they responding to it?
Well, they've after the initial micro recession, if you will, they've rebounded just because of demand, although the supply has been strained. But a great data point for the listeners, Daimler, the maker of Mercedes-Benz, they sold 25% less vehicles compared to last year. However, they just reported their net profits increased 20%.
Was there not a stockpile of chips before the pandemic, or did they just not keep, the automakers just not keep that many on hand?
That's a great question. And again, going back to the changes that we're seeing is the auto industry's relied on just-in-time inventory for the past 50 years. Now it's undergoing the largest transformation almost a half century. And that's case in point just with the announcement with Kentucky and SK Innovation. Companies and particularly automakers are changing, are rethinking their supply chain, Rick.
I want to come back to you, Jay, and talk more about the supply chain, but I want to get back to the auto industry and the future of the auto industry and electric cars here in Kentucky and the big announcement from Ford building these two battery manufacturing plants in Hardin County. It was announced in late September. More than a $5 billion investment. Marcus, you've been reporting on this. Glendale is not a big town, is it? It's unincorporated. It's a small community. What's the reaction been there?
The reaction there and in the surrounding area and really in the region has been one of excitement and anticipation. Of course, we all have to remember that Kentucky pushed very hard to lure Hyundai to that site in Glendale back in 2002, and it lost out. And over the years, that site has been marketed as one of the preeminent economic development greenfield sites in Kentucky. And so to land not only a tenant for it, but to land a tenant with the clout and the size of Ford and the projected impact with jobs and overall economic impact is pretty exciting. And so the region, the cities in the region, Bardstown and Elizabethtown, and even up to Louisville, I mean, this is going to have a very significant regional economic impact. And so everyone is sort of jockeying to provide the types of ancillary businesses and services that are necessary to support the type of investment and job creation that's going to occur there.
We are talking about the automotive industry here in Kentucky and elsewhere, and in conversation on WFPO. You just heard Marcus Green. He's been covering it for WDRB News and WDRB.com. Also with us today are Jay Bauer, who's a senior trade credit consultant, a supply chain expert from Euler Hermes North America. That's a provider of trade credit insurance. He's been talking about the supply chain. Ron Starner is with us, executive vice president of Site Selection Magazine. It's an international business magazine based in Atlanta. He reports on the auto industry. And Melissa Aguilar-Southard is with us. She is the member relations director for the Kentucky Association of Manufacturers. We want to hear from you, too. Call us with your thoughts about all this that's going on with the auto industry here in Kentucky and elsewhere. 502-814-TALK is our number, 502-814-8255. You can send us a tweet if you'd like. WFPL News is our handle. And we're also on Facebook. Let me come back to you, Melissa. And with this Ford announcement and the Georgetown expansion, where does this place Kentucky among other states in terms of auto manufacturing? It's got to be among the tops now, other than, I guess, not quite the way Michigan was in Detroit, but up there in the top 10, I would think.
Well, if you consider cars, light trucks, and SUVs, we're actually the number one producer of all three together. So that places us, you know, we're first place. What I probably would say additionally is, you know, after these expansions and certainly the new businesses coming in, you know, the first thing is logistically, Kentucky makes sense. You know, we're within 2/3 of U.S. population for a single day's drive. So we're really competitive when it comes to incentive programs also through our economic development. You take into consideration our labor costs, although, you know, we have seen a lot of the wages increase because of shortage of workers that we're seeing right now across the Commonwealth. But basically, you just don't get better than where we are in Kentucky right now.
502-814-TALK again is our number, 502-814-8255. I knew Jackie Green was going to call. He's always vocal about transportation issues, and he is going to be joining us now. Jackie, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Rick, thanks. Hi, Marcus. I'm quite excited about the electric vehicles, the EVs also, but I'm not excited the way that most people are. I think we need a little realism here. Kentucky sources its the U.S. sources its electricity primarily through coal and fracked gas. To pretend that the electricity that these cars are going to be running on comes from solar and other renewables is a fallacy. Then there is the fact that electric cars are still cars. They require tremendous infrastructure, wasteful infrastructure. There's a huge mining and manufacturing process, which is not an environmentally friendly one. There are recycling problems with at the end of life. I just, you know, the cars consume too high a percentage of family budgets, and they're not a very socially equitable, this form of transportation. We should be spending money on public transit. We should be spending money on Amtrak. We should be spending money on making our cities more walkable, not building electric cars.
All right, Jackie, we appreciate your input. Thanks for calling us. 502-814-TALK is our number, 502-814-8255. Marcus Green, let's come back to you because you've talked to some folks who design or some scientists who work on these batteries that are going to be used in these cars. What are they? How do they work?
Well, the batteries that Ford would build are lithium-ion batteries, and they... you know, it's a totally, of course, it's these are battery operated cars. And so a lot of the research and the, you know, technical expertise that is occurring, not just here in Louisville, at places like the University of Louisville's Kahn Center, but other places, you know, again, it's an emerging industry. And a lot of scientists and other researchers are really looking at how they might be involved in this process. And so, you know, there is a lot of excitement about how academics, researchers, and others are going to come to, you know, play in this industry. And there's a lot of excitement. I mean, the folks down at the Kahn Center are very excited. They're excited mainly because, one, they might have an opportunity to be a small part in this bigger new industry, but also they're excited because they've been doing work for a long time that is now being recognized and really brought into the mainstream. And if I could for a second just address what Jackie mentioned. I mean, this is sort of the one side of electric vehicles that doesn't get brought into the conversation enough is that what really is the cost benefit when it comes to the environment? Because again, as Jackie's mentioned, we have to consider the source of the energy for these vehicles. And he makes a point that I don't think gets talked about enough. But on the flip side, you know, there are, and these concerns that he mentioned are correct. You know, there is a production process that isn't necessarily domestic with the mining of lithium that occurs primarily overseas. And Jackie's point, too, about other considerations such as end-of-life recycling. I mean, there was just a significant fire that occurred a couple of years ago in Illinois that happened in a facility that was storing lithium batteries. And so, again, these are not to be unexpected considerations, but they are things that also need to be talked about and really looked at as we think about how electric vehicles are going to become part of our society.
And you've, Marcus, you covered the announcement. We spoke a little bit earlier about tax money and government incentives, state incentives being offered to bring these plants here. What did the state put on the table to attract this development?
Well, this was part of the special legislative session that occurred in September. It was primarily about the state's response to COVID-19. But one of the bills that passed was a bill that did allow Kentucky to do something that other states have the ability to do, which is to offer a sort of upfront incentive, cash upfront, if you will, so to speak, to companies looking to locate in Kentucky. And so this incentive package, which Ford and SK have not yet applied for, but it's expected that they'll apply for up to $285 million in state incentives. The most significant part of that is a forgivable loan if they meet job targets. That would be $250 million. And there's also a pretty sizable workforce training component to that of about $36 million. And that would be money that would go towards training the workers who would work at these plants. And so, as Melissa has mentioned, there is that education and training component that is going to have to be part of filling these jobs.
As Ford said, how much these jobs would pay and when they're going to start hiring?
You know, someone else might know that answer better than I do. I can't recall if they've laid out a specific wage target, although I know everyone believes these are going to be very high-paying jobs.
Have you heard anything about that, Melissa?
No, actually, we haven't. You know, at this point, we're probably pulling the comparables in the local area to be able to see what everyone else is paying. We quite often do that for employers when they call us, especially since, you know, COVID has taken effect and all the wages have increased. We do a lot of just comparison ratios on wages.
Let me come back and talk to you, Ron, about Ron Sterner with Site Selection Magazine. He reports on the auto industry about electric cars and the demand that you were talking about for them. What is the price range for one right now? And of course, as more are manufactured, do you see the price dropping significantly?
Yeah, I mean, you're starting to see them become a lot more affordable. And when they first came out, obviously Tesla was really the first to mass market these. You know, their products typically were above $50,000, most of them above $60,000 as you got into the larger SUVs, $80,000 to $100,000. Even Tesla is now coming out with smaller models that are more affordable, like in the $30,000 to $40,000 price range. Ford, which we're talking about a lot here this morning, is really has the potential to disrupt the market in a huge way with the introduction of the Ford Maverick small to mid-sized pickup truck, which is actually a plug-in hybrid. The hybrid engine is actually coming standard on the Maverick, the first model year being 2022, and it's got an MSRP of between $25,000 and $30,000, which is kind of unheard of for a vehicle that is going to run largely on electric power, much less a pickup truck. Obviously, this is they're marketing this to probably first-time car buyers, younger people, you know, the people that are not going to be in the market for the much more expensive Ford Lightning. But it's interesting with electric cars as opposed to gas-powered cars. It's almost like price doesn't matter because the companies have figured out that they can release a new EV and they can virtually sell out before they reach the showroom floor. So, you know, I wouldn't be holding my breath for lots of affordable EVs in the future. Clearly, the success or lack of it with the Ford Maverick will be a key test case for the entire auto industry moving forward.
Well, you mentioned General Motors earlier. Of course, GM makes the Corvette here in Kentucky at the Bowling Green plant. It's hard to imagine a Corvette without a gas-powered engine. But is GM planning an electric Corvette in the near future?
I've not seen any plans for that. Having said that, you know, clearly orders for the new Z06 Corvette Stingray are going to go through the roof. You probably all saw the release of that last week, the much hyped, much ballyhooed release of the new 2023 Corvette. It's already receiving rave reviews from virtually everyone in the automotive industry. It's really a game changer because this really is the first supercar that Chevrolet, i.e. GM, has ever produced. And yet still, it's going to be relatively affordable. And by that, I mean, compared to other supercars, it's going to come out with an MSRP of between $80,000 and $100,000, depending upon the option packages that you get on it. Well, that pales in comparison to the sticker you're going to see on Ferraris and Lamborghinis and Maseratis. So this could be a game changer as well. I wouldn't totally write off the internal combustion engine. You know, they're going with the flat plane crank V8 with this, and I think it's going to have a lot of appeal and a lot of staying power.
All right, let me stop there. We got to take a break. We'll be back with much more about the automotive industry on In Conversation on WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. Stay with us.
Support for LPM Podcasts comes from the Eye Care Institute and Butchertown Clinical Trials, where they strive for diversity, equity, and inclusion within their staff, patients, and clinical trial participants. To learn more, visit butchertown.clinic.
Welcome back to In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. I'm Rick Howlett in Louisville. Today we're talking about the automotive industry in Kentucky and some big plans here in Kentucky in anticipation of more people buying and driving electric cars. Our guests today are Melissa Aguilar-Southard, who is Member Relations Director of the Kentucky Association of Manufacturers. Ron Starner is with us. He's Executive Vice President of Site Selection Magazine. That's an international business magazine based down in Atlanta. He reports on the auto industry. Jay Bauer is with us. He is our supply chain expert. He is a senior trade credit consultant with the company Euler Hermes. And Marcus Green is with us. He's been reporting on auto industry news here and elsewhere for WDRB News and WDRB.com. And we want to hear your thoughts about all the things going on in the auto industry, including the current supply chain shortage and the shortage of some cars and used cars on dealer lots that some have been experiencing, and plans for the future, the big Ford announcement with the battery plants in Glendale and Toyota's expansion, nearly $500 million at the Georgetown plant. 502-814-TALK is our number, 502-814-8255. Fred in Louisville has been waiting patiently. Let's get to him. Hello, Fred. Welcome to In Conversation.
Fred, hey, good morning, guys. No one has touched on, or at least I haven't heard of it yet, the key to Tesla's success that gets overlooked, I think, with many of these manufacturers coming out with new lines and trying to play catch-up, is the charging network. That supercharging network is not going to be available. There's talks that Tesla may open it up to other manufacturers. But that fast-charging network is the only real game-changer in the electric car industry. If you buy a Chevy, you buy a Toyota, or any other kind of product like that, you're going to be sitting at a very slow-paced charging network for hours. It makes inner-city travel, state-to-state travel almost impossible. And that's been the key to Tesla's success that no other manufacturer wants to, acknowledge or realize that they need to do. They took that on early on and built the network nationwide, coast-to-coast, that allows you to charge fully and continue traveling in 20 to 30 minutes. I don't know if your guests had any information on these other manufacturers.
That's
either
a good,
mm-hmm. part of their own network. Or...
That's a good point, Fred. I just assumed all charging stations were the same. Jake, you want to speak to that as a supply chain expert? What's this going to? How do you see this unfolding as more electric cars become available and they all, of course, need charging?
Well, Rick, I think the caller brought up a perfect point that from a supply chain standpoint, as well as just being able to support these electric vehicles, Tesla does have the infrastructure in place. So as far as Ford, Toyota, and the other large automakers that are going to be positioning and selling electric vehicles, that is going to be a challenge to be able to support efficient use of electric vehicles and the travel to position it the way that Tesla has. And I'm not sure if one of the other experts on the panel has any additional insight to support what's coming online for those other auto suppliers, but that's certainly a great point from your caller.
Ron Starner, what are you seeing in the future in terms of the charging capabilities?
Well, first of all, what a great question by the caller. Very timely. Kudos to you for being on top of that. Other states have recognized this, and literally earlier this week, a coalition of manufacturers in the state of Michigan presented a plan urging the state to invest $600 million into EV infrastructure and workforce training. A good chunk of that would go into an EV charging network throughout the state. So I do think that this is one of those areas, like the caller said, that if it's not addressed in the near future, some states are going to fall behind, and people will be able to drive EVs for a little more than commuting back and forth in their town, which is a lot of driving, don't get me wrong, but they're not going to be taking trips to the beach in Florida anytime soon in their Tesla, or not the Tesla, but the Ford and GM products, because they won't find the superchargers there. So I would encourage folks in Kentucky to take a look at what this coalition of manufacturers in Michigan has already put together. And I think there's a pretty good appetite, given that the automotive industry is still the bread and butter and lifeblood of the Michigan economy, that the Michigan governor and legislature will step up to the plate and pass this bill.
502-814-8255 is our number, and I was going to go to David, but it looks like he's no longer with us, so we'll stay with our guest here. Again, we're talking about the automotive industry here in Kentucky and elsewhere. You just heard the voice of Ron Starner, Executive Vice President of Site Selection Magazine. Also with us is Melissa Aguilar-Southard, who is with the Kentucky Association of Manufacturers. Jay Bauer is our supply chain expert. He is a senior trade credit consultant from Euler Hermes North America. And Marcus Green is with us, reporter for WDRB News and WDRB.com here in Louisville. He's been covering the auto industry. Jay, let me come back to you and back to the current supply chain issues that have been affecting all sectors of the economy, but particularly the automotive industry. How is the federal government getting involved in trying to break loose some of these log jams, or is there only so much that the government can do?
Well, there
you bring up an extra point as far as government limitations, because and if I had to sum it up for the listeners, we're experiencing high demand coupled with shortages in labor and massive supply chain challenges, and that's across both freight, the ports, railroad. It's really been a domino effect, if you will, that's bleeding into not only the automotive industry, but every industry is experiencing those same challenges with supply shortages. So the government is encouraging longer shifts. There's been some talk even on the West Coast of the National Guard coming in to help, but the challenge is already there, and it's clear and present. So there's limitations to what the government can do, and really what it's going to be is a function of time and things getting caught back up after all of these challenges we've faced thus far post-pandemic, as well as just the extreme demand too. And unfortunately, the supply chain crisis is kind of bleeding into an energy crisis and potentially some challenges in certain food products too, and shortages from that standpoint there.
Well, assuming we, I think you touched on this earlier, assuming we continue to improve and to emerge from the pandemic, can you speculate on a timeline as when things will get back to some semblance of what we used to of normal?
Yeah, that crystal ball is anyone's guess, and that's a great question. But what is happening, and just as we're seeing it here for Kentuckians, is many companies are changing their entire supply chain management, where previously they might have had factories offshore. They're bringing them back to the U.S. to have better control over that. So if they're easier to manufacture, they're coming back here to the U.S. Eventually what's going to happen, and this could be some challenges for the automotive industry as well, is demand is still significantly high for automobiles. When inventory catches back up, that will subside, and we are anticipating, and I'm going air quotes here for the radio listeners, normalcy more towards the back half of 2022, the second half of 2022, if you will, Rick.
502-814-TALK, again, is our number, 502-814-8255. You have a question or comment for our guests as we talk about the automotive industry. You can send us a tweet if you like. WFPL News is our handle, and you can also reach us through Facebook as well. Melissa, let me come back to you. Kentucky has been a right-to-work state for several years, meaning you don't have to pay union fees as a condition of employment at companies that have union. It's been a big a GOP agenda item in many states. Republicans have long said right-to-work would help entice companies to the state. Union supporters say, well, the law is an attempt to weaken labor unions. What, if any, effect have you seen right-to-work have on Kentucky and on manufacturing, especially the auto industry, manufacturing and locating in Kentucky? Obviously, Ford has been long affiliated with the United Auto Workers, but just generally, what effect have, if any, have you seen right to work have here in Kentucky?
So, you know, that's kind of a mixed bag of answers, to be honest with you. We've got certain companies that they don't mind the right to work issue, and then we've got others that want to stay completely away from it. Mm-hmm. So it truly just depends on the company that we're working with and the manufacturing sector that we're working with.
502-814-TALK is our number, 502-814-8255. Ron, let me come back to you. Have there been any, we talked about the environmental issues that have been discussed regarding electric, the manufacturing of electric vehicles. Are there any major safety issues, Ron, that need to be resolved with the vehicles themselves?
So, I mean, we haven't reported on any major safety issues involving the new vehicles other than, I mean, there have been some, you know, a few incidences of batteries catching on fire or leaking or that sort of thing. Someone brought up the point of the whole battery disposal issue being a major issue long term. I totally agree with that, and I don't feel like that's been adequately addressed by state and federal governments. So look for that to change. And also, replacing these batteries is incredibly expensive. You know, I think a lot of people that buy EVs are going to be, well, they may not experience sticker shock when they order their car. I think they are going to experience price shock when they go to get their battery replaced, because you could be talking several thousands of dollars easily.
Let's go to the phones, and Shelley is in Lexington. Hi, Shelley. Thanks for waiting. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. Two points I just want to make. The gentleman who was concerned about the source of electricity for charging these EVs, I agree with that, that at the moment the electricity source is not green, but really that's just a matter of time. All we need to do is convert all the cars on the road into EVs, and then we can keep on deciding where the electricity is going to come from, and it is going to happen. But by that time, if all the cars have been converted, great. Second thing, I've just become a proud owner of a plug-in hybrid, and I'm really happy with it. The only thing is that when you take it on the road outside, I mean, for intercity travel, I think the manufacturers are overlooking something, and that is if they just add a generator into it, which is different from hybrid, just a generator that you can use to charge your battery if you need to, that should solve the problem. It just seems to be a lack of imagination. Nobody has gone into that side. The amount of oil that you will use, the amount of gas you will use is very little to charge it because you won't need it.
Shelley, is, you say
just
this,
those 2 points.
This was your first, this is your first hybrid?
Yes, sir.
I mean, and you like it? Do you notice any major differences between that and the traditional automobile when it comes to driving it?
Firstly, it is very silent, so you have to get used to that. You start it, and you're like, have I started the car or not? But the second thing is the pickup is great, and I mean, it's as good as the other. And then it is just this feel of, you know, that you are doing something for the environment. I think that that's a very good feeling.
I just bought a Jeep that has a pollution control device on it, I guess, where when you stop, the engine automatically goes off. And then when you let off the brake and start to press the gas, the engine automatically comes on. It's kind of like a golf car, but it took me a while to get used to that. It's a great idea, but it was something to get accustomed to. Shelley, thanks so much for your call. Let's go to Richmond, Kentucky, and Brian. Hello, Brian. Welcome to the program.
Hello. Let's go to Richmond, Kentucky, and
turn your phone, Brian, turn your phone down, and you're on the air.
There we go. So I had a question. My question comes from, I guess, the cell phones and the charging systems that we're using on our cell phones, how Apple versus Android versus Samsung, whatever. We have different types of plugs. We have different types of chargers. Is there any type of conversation that's going around for as far as government regulation, some sort of standardization for chargers so that every manufacturer, I know you don't want to stifle innovation, but at the same time, you also want to make everybody be able to use the infrastructure that's in place. Is that something that's being talked about?
Ron Sterner, would you be able to address that?
Well, I mean, the point was brought up earlier about how Tesla has taken the lead on that, and absolutely, Tesla is light years ahead. The answer to the caller's question, the short answer is no, there's no standardization yet, but there needs to be. You know, you look, and a lot of this is going to require more partnerships between multiple companies. I think your callers may be familiar with Sheetz, gas stations and convenience stores. I don't know, do you guys have Sheetz in Kentucky? I'm in Georgia.
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. Well, they've recently started rolling out rows and rows of Tesla EV supercharging stations at their gas stations. And I was recently traveling in Virginia, and I stopped at a Sheetz. I have a gas car, and I looked to my right, and there was a whole row of Teslas plugged in there. And I thought, wow, kudos to both Tesla and Sheetz for partnering with each other and coming up with this. I live in a suburb of Atlanta called Peachtree Corners, which is a very innovative community. And there's a parking garage at a shopping center about a mile from my office that has a bank of Tesla superchargers. There's probably 25 of those there. And
they're almost always in use. So I guess to get back to the caller's question, we need more standardization. Otherwise, you know, unless you have a Tesla, you're kind of going to be out of luck when you go on a long road trip.
I'm wondering how the gasoline industry is adapting to all this, or plans to adapt to all this, Ron. Maybe they're going to be diversifying into electric vehicles, or making that investment into charging stations.
Well, again, these are all critical infrastructure issues that have to be addressed. I go back to the Michigan bill that's going to probably invest $600 million just to lay the groundwork for it. But it's going to require partnerships between companies like Shell and Chevron and Valero and the electric car industry. And, you know, quite frankly, there's a huge investment across this country in our gas station infrastructure, right? We've got truck stops. You know, you've got gas stations galore, convenience stores. And what's going to happen to all of that infrastructure? I mean, these pumps have to be dug up every so many years anyway and replaced, the gas tanks. So, I mean, if I had owned a network of those gas stations, I would, if I wasn't already making orders for electric car superchargers, I would certainly get on the ball and start doing that. I think Sheetz has provided a good model as we go through this transition in our automotive economy, where whether you need gas or electricity, you can get it there. This is a critical need, and unfortunately, it's being overlooked by a lot of states right now.
Well, we've just about run out of time, and it's been a fun conversation. I want to thank all of you for joining us. Marcus Green with WDRB News and WDRB.com. Jay Bauer, our supply chain expert from Euler Hermes. Ron Starner, Site Selection Magazine, and Melissa Aguilar-Southard from the Kentucky Association of Manufacturers. Thank you all so much for joining us. A lot to talk about in the car industry in the future. We'll do it again. Thanks again. You can hear this and other In Conversation programs by visiting WFPL.org/In Conversation or follow us wherever you get your podcast. You can email us with comments and suggestions. Send them to InConversation@LouisvillePublicMedia.org. I want to thank our In Conversation production team, Michelle Tyreen Johnson, Laura Ellis, Brad Yost, and Russell Wells. Bill Burton anchors our local newscast. Kojin Toshiro composed our opening and closing theme. And I'm Rick Howlett. Thanks for listening.